The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich is our Israel Report guru, blogging, by the way, on Comments from the Edge. So if you can't get enough of him on the show, then go to the blog. Anthony, welcome this morning. Boker Tov. Iran has been exposed as building weapon storage tunnels in eastern Syria. We were talking about this just earlier on this week.
Iran unfortunately has been found to be active again. We spoke about Iran in a slightly different context, more recently, Fox News has actually revealed a whole series of constructions. Apparently, there have been satellite images that have recently been released that show that Iran has been excavating these tunnels in Syria near to the Iraqi border at the Imam Ali base, which is an Iranian base just on that eastern side of Syria. And there's been quite a lot of information that's been revealed in terms of these satellite images that show a lot of activities. They claim that these tunnels have been under construction for at least a year. Some of them apparently going back to even earlier than that. And the tunnels apparently are designed not only to store weapons and to store all kinds of military hardware, but indeed to help move them from Iran via Iraq, ironically, because, of course, Iran and Iraq at the moment are not necessarily seeing eye to eye. But nevertheless, there seems to be the supply route via Iraq and through into Syria to where this Imam Ali base is and this underground storage facility. We're told that it's at least 130 meters long, and the underground facility is wide enough to drive a car through. And when you look at these satellite images, then you can see quite clearly the activity that's been going on there. We're told that the base apparently was attacked back in September of this year. And so there seems to be an indication that the IDF might well have been following the developments relatively carefully and have been aware of what's going on there even before these satellite images were released, and have been on the case in order to try and prevent Iran from continuing this. But it's just another indication of the extent to which Iran is entrenched in Syria, and they continue to insist upon being more and more entrenched, building infrastructure, building weapons storage facilities, underground tunnels now. It's just quite amazing to see how much investment Iran has been involved with in establishing themselves in Syria, obviously trying to fill the gap to some degree that's been created by the defeat of some of those renegade groups in Syria, and also trying to fill the gap that's been vacated, the area that's been vacated to some degree by the Syrian forces, because, of course, the Syrian forces themselves have been fairly weakened in that area. And so Iran is very much stepping into the breach, ironically, for a number of reasons, because, first of all, at home, the economic situation for the average Iranian is quite severe and quite dire. And despite that fact, the Iranians continue to build up their terror infrastructure everywhere. So obviously, some interesting things that Fox News have revealed. I'm not sure whether any of this is any news to the Israeli intelligence and the IDF, but this is certainly interesting to people who don't have access to some of these intelligence reports.
Yeah, certainly quite disturbing seeing the way that Iran is entrenching itself across the Middle East. But it's not bothering the Europeans, because the Luxembourg foreign minister has decided to try and convince his EU colleagues to put the two-state solution back on the agenda. What is he hoping to achieve by that?
Well, I think the way that things stand at the moment with the EU policy towards Israel is that they support the idea of a two-state solution, but one that is negotiated between the parties. That's their official position as things stand at the moment. Having said that, they've been watching from the sidelines that, of course, there'd be no negotiations. And more than that, apparently the Luxembourg foreign minister has become increasingly concerned that the Americans seem to be taking a view which, in his opinion, is damaging to the Palestinian cause. And this is Foreign Minister Jean Asselborn, who said that, you know, by the Americans stating that Israel has the right to be in Judea and Samaria and that it doesn't contravene any legal international law in any way, he feels that that kind of tips the balance in favor of Israel. And he, I think, is responding to that by trying somehow to redress the balance as he sees things. And he's written to his EU foreign minister colleagues to suggest that they have this discussion about the two-state solution. And apparently they're due to have this discussion when they meet again in Brussels in January. And what he wants to do is he's actually trying to promote the idea of some sort of a unilateral support by the European Union for a Palestinian state, which is not necessarily negotiated between the parties, but is simply unilaterally declared. So that seems to be the point of view that the foreign minister of Luxembourg is trying to promote. And he seems to have support from his Irish counterpart, who also, I think, holds a similar view. But it's interesting that many of the other EU countries, the 28 nations that make up the bloc of the EU, are not necessarily supportive of this at all. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that discussion pans out in January when eventually it takes place in Brussels. We've heard from the EU foreign policy chief who said that, you know, effectively just reiterated what the EU foreign policy at the moment is. That's Joseph Borrell. He said that, you know, he's been chairing different meetings on this issue between the various ministers of the EU, foreign ministers of the EU. And he's just reiterated that at the moment, the policy is that it should be a negotiated settlement between the parties. But I just wondered to myself whether, arising from that meeting that is due to take place in January, whether the EU might shift its opinion slightly and might shift its view in order to try and support a more unilateral declaration of statehood by the Palestinians, which, of course, the Palestinian Authority has been seeking. Because they simply don't wish to sit down and negotiate with Israel and come to the compromises which will be necessary in order to reach a two-state solution. Let's not forget that even the Israeli government, I say even, but I mean for a long time now, the Israeli government has stated quite unequivocally that they support the idea of a two-state solution. I think that you will find that most Israelis support the idea of a two-state solution, but it needs to be a two-state solution with a very, very clear understanding that each of the two states respect the other, respect the rights of the other to continue to exist in the form that they wish. And at the moment, that's a real sticking block because the Israelis have said until such time as the Palestinian side is prepared to acknowledge that Israel has the right to exist as a Jewish state, there's really very, very little to talk about going forward. And unfortunately, that's where the sticking point is right now. It would be interesting to see what would transpire if the Palestinians turned around and said, you know what, we absolutely accept the right of Israel to exist as a Jewish state alongside the borders of a future Palestinian state. Let's move to the next point of discussion, of which there are numerous and very, very complex ones, including the status of refugees and including the status of Jerusalem and numerous other very, very important sticking points, which are not necessarily there for resolving, but which will require a lot of compromise and, of course, some significant negotiations in order to get through them. So at the moment, unfortunately, the two-state solution, as far as the Israelis and the Palestinians are concerned, is not moving anywhere. We've seen the view of the U.S. government. Now we're seeing the view of the European Union, or perhaps we will see the view when they held this meeting early in the new year.
An Israeli desalination company called DieselTech has been sold to DuPont. What is unique about this Israeli company that such a large conglomerate wanted to buy it?
Well, DieselTech is a company that's been around for the last 10 years or so. And it's in the business of what's called closed circuit reverse osmosis. And I don't pretend to understand anything about how this exactly works. But what I do know is that it takes water that is not available for drinking or for agricultural purposes or for general use. And it cleans it up such that the industrial water, the effluent, eventually becomes good enough to be able to reuse. And their speciality seems to be in the world of agricultural water supply, and, you know, effectively cleaning the water up such that it is in good enough condition and quality enough in order to be used in agriculture. And as I said, this is a company that's been around for about 10 odd years. They've managed to raise $25 million over the time that they've been around. So they're not a new company. I wouldn't call them a startup in the classic sense of the word, but they are clearly guys who've got quite a unique closed circuit reverse osmosis system that apparently can reduce the cost of reverse osmosis water treatment by between 20% and 60%. Now, of course, with the current water shortages, not only in the Middle East, but indeed much, much further afield these days, the whole idea of desalination and particularly reverse osmosis has become very, very interesting. And hence DuPont announced yesterday that they'd signed this agreement to acquire Desalitec. No numbers were disclosed in the announcement, but I'm assuming that the $25 million that's been spent up until now in developing the technology is probably going to be a relatively small number in comparison to what DuPont ultimately has agreed to pay for this company. The deal is due to close in January, but I think it's just another indication of Israel's involvement and even some dominance to some degree in the whole area of desalination, the technology that's being used in reverse osmosis, and another feather in the cap for Israeli technology.
Yeah, absolutely, Anthony, and it's good to see. And hopefully we can also see it coming to South Africa, because we could certainly use a bit of water. Dov coming in on this, saying that the Palestinians already have Jordan. Why must we give them any more? No to two-state. It will just formalize a launch pad for Iranian attacks. Iran must be destroyed before there's any two-state solution. So yeah, some pretty strong views coming from Dov there on the SMS line. Thank you so much for giving us your views on that, Dov. Anthony, there is another story, but I think we're going to leave it for tomorrow, just because it seems quite involved and quite interesting, or for Monday rather, because you don't join us on the Friday, if I'm correct. So
yeah, that's correct.
So we'll leave that for Monday.
We can talk about Israel aerospace industry on Monday. It's still a relevant story then, but again, another interesting story about current airplane safety and the involvement of Israel aerospace industries, in the work that's going on. A lot of people are not aware of some of the work that they're going on. Unfortunately, the story involves a grounding of some of their aircraft, but I will be happy to talk about that on Monday. And until then, I wish you guys a great weekend and a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to discussing that story with you. Shabbat Shalom, and we'll chat to you then.